Chapter 12. Beyond all measure astonished by the strange occurrences which had passed with so much violence and rapidity, the locksmith gazed upon the shuddering figure in the chair like one half stupefied, and would have gazed much longer, had not his tongue been loosened by compassion and humanity. "You are ill," apostrophe said Gabriel. "Let me call some neighbor in." Apostrophe, "Not for the world, apostrophe," she rejoined, motioning to him with her trembling hand, and holding her face averted. "It is enough that you have been by to see this." Apostrophe, "Nay, more than enough or less," apostrophe said Gabriel. "Be it so," apostrophe she returned. "As you like. Ask me no questions, I entreat you." Apostrophe, "Neighbor," apostrophe said the locksmith, after a pause. "Is this fair, or reasonable, or just to yourself? Is it like you, who have known me so long, and sought my advice in all matters, like you, who from a girl, have had a strong mind and a staunch heart?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "I have need of them," apostrophe she replied. "I am growing old, both in years and care. Perhaps that, and too much trial, have made them weaker than they used to be. Do not speak to me." Apostrophe, "How can I see what I have seen, and hold my peace?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned the locksmith. "Who was that man, and why has his coming made this change in you?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, she was silent, but held to the chair, as though to save herself from falling on the ground. "I take the license of an old acquaintance, Mary," apostrophe said the locksmith, "who has ever had a warm regard for you, and maybe has tried to prove it when he could. Who is this ill-favored man, and what has he to do with you? Who is this ghost, that is only seen in the black nights and bad weather? How does he know, and why does he haunt, this house, whispering through chinks and crevices, as if there was that between him and you, which neither durst so much as speak aloud of? Who is he?" Apostrophe, "You do well to say he haunts this house," apostrophe returned the widow, faintly. "His shadow has been upon it and me, in light and darkness, at noonday and midnight. And now, at last, he has come in the body." Apostrophe, apostrophe, "But he wouldn't have gone in the body," apostrophe returned the locksmith with some irritation, "if you had left my arms and legs at liberty. What riddle is this?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "It is one," apostrophe she answered, rising as she spoke, "that must remain forever as it is. I dare not say more than that." Apostrophe, "Dare not." Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated the wondering locksmith. "Do not press me," apostrophe she replied. "I am sick and faint, and every faculty of life seems dead within me. No, do not touch me either." Apostrophe, Gabriel, who had stepped forward to render her assistance, fell back as she made this hasty exclamation, and regarded her in silent wonder. "Let me go my way alone," apostrophe she said in a low voice, "and let the hands of no honest man touch mine tonight." Apostrophe, when she had tottered to the door, she turned, and added with a stronger effort, "This is a secret, which, of necessity, I trust to you. You are a true man. As you have ever been good and kind to me, keep it. If any noise was heard above, make some excuse, say anything but what you really saw, and never let a word or look between us recall this circumstance. I trust to you. Mind, I trust to you. How much I trust, you never can conceive." Apostrophe, casting her eyes upon him for an instant, she withdrew, and left him there alone. Gabriel, not knowing what to think, stood staring at the door with a countenance full of surprise and dismay. The more he pondered on what had passed, the less able he was to give it any favorable interpretation. To find this widow woman, whose life for so many years had been supposed to be one of solitude and retirement, and who, in her quiet suffering character, had gained the good opinion and respect of all who knew her, to find her linked mysteriously with an ill-omened man, alarmed at his appearance, and yet favoring his escape, was a discovery that pained as much as startled him. her reliance on his secrecy, and his tacit acquiescence, increased his distress of mind. If he had spoken boldly, persisted in questioning her, detained her when she rose to leave the room, made any kind of protest, instead of silently compromising himself, as he felt he had done, he would have been more at ease. Why did I let her say it was a secret, and she trusted it to me? Said Gabriel, putting his wig on one side to scratch his head with greater ease, and looking ruefully at the fire. I have no more readiness than old John himself. Why didn't I say firmly, you have no right to such secrets, and I demand of you to tell me what this means, instead of standing gaping at her, like an old moon calf as I am. But there's my weakness. I can be obstinate enough with men if need be, but women may twist me round their fingers at their pleasure. He took his wig off outright as he made this reflection, and, warming his handkerchief at the fire, began to rub and polish his bald head with it, until it glistened again. And yet, said the locksmith, softening under this soothing process, and stopping to smile, it may be nothing. Any drunken brawler trying to make his way into the house would have alarmed a quiet soul like her. But then and here was the vexation, how came it to be that man? How comes he to have this influence over her? How came she to favor his getting away from me? And, more than all, how came she not to say it was a sudden fright, and nothing more? It's a sad thing to have, in one minute, reason to mistrust a person I have known so long, and an old sweetheart into the bargain. But what else can I do, with all this upon my mind? Is that Barnaby outside there? He cried, looking in and nodding. Sure enough, it's Barnaby. How did you guess? By your shadow, said the locksmith. Oh ho! Cried Barnaby, glancing over his shoulder. He's a merry fellow, that shadow, and keeps close to me, though I am silly. We have such pranks, such walks, such runs, such gambols on the grass. Sometimes he'll be half as tall as a church steeple, and sometimes no bigger than a dwarf. Now, he goes on before, and now behind, and anon he'll be stealing on this side, or on that, stopping whenever I stop, and thinking I can't see him, though I have my eye on him sharp enough. Oh, he's a merry fellow. Tell me, is he silly too? I think he is. Why? Asked Gabriel. Because he never tires of mocking me, but does it all day long. Why don't you come? Where? Upstairs. He wants you. Stay where's his shadow? Come. You're a wise man. Tell me that. Beside him, Barnaby. Beside him, I suppose, returned the locksmith. No. He replied, shaking his head. Guess again. Gone out a-walking, maybe? He has changed shadows with a woman. The idiot whispered in his ear, and then fell back with a look of triumph. Her shadow's always with him, and his with her. That's sport, I think, eh? Said the locksmith, with a grave look. Come hither, lad. I know what you want to say. I know. He replied, keeping away from him. But I'm cunning, I'm silent. I only say, so much to you. Are you ready? As he spoke, he caught up the light, and waved it with a wild laugh above his head. Softly, gently, said the locksmith, exerting all his influence, to keep him calm and quiet. I thought you had been asleep. So I have been asleep, he rejoined, with widely opened eyes. There have been great faces coming and going close to my face, and then a mile away low places to creep through, whether I would, or no. High churches, to fall down from strange creatures crowded up together neck and heels, to sit upon the bed that sleep, eh? Dreams, Barnaby, dreams, said the locksmith. Dreams. " he echoed softly, drawing closer to him. "Those are not dreams." "What are?" replied the locksmith. "If they are not?" "I dreamed," said Barnaby, passing his arm through Varden's, and peering close into his face as he answered in a whisper, "I dreamed just now that something, it was in the shape of a man, followed me, came softly after me, wouldn't let me be, but was always hiding and crouching, like a cat in dark corners, waiting till I should pass. When it crept out, and came softly after me. Did you ever see me run? Many a time, you know. You never saw me run as I did in this dream. Still it came creeping on to worry me. Nearer I ran, faster leaped, sprung out of bed, and to the window, and there, in the street below, Buddy is waiting for us. Are you coming? What in the street below, Barnaby? Said Varden, imagining that he traced some connection between this vision and what had actually occurred. Barnaby looked into his face, muttered incoherently, waved the light above his head again, laughed, and drawing the locksmith's arm more tightly through his own, led him up the stairs in silence. They entered a homely bedchamber, garnished in a scanty way with chairs, whose spindle shanks bespoke their age, and other furniture of very little worth, but clean and neatly kept. Reclining in an easy chair before the fire, pale and weak from waste of blood, was Edward Chester, the young gentleman who had been the first to quit the Maypole on the previous night, and who, extending his hand to the locksmith, welcomed him as his preserver and friend. "Say no more, sir, say no more," said Gabriel. "I hope I would have done at least as much for any man in such a strait, and most of all for you, sir. A certain young lady," he added, with some hesitation, "has done us many a kind turn, and we naturally feel, I hope I give you no offense in saying this, sir?" The young man smiled, and shook his head, at the same time moving in his chair, as if in pain. "It's no great matter," he said, in answer to the locksmith's sympathizing look, "a mere uneasiness arising at least as much from being cooped up here, as from the slight wound I have, or from the loss of blood. Be seated, Mr. Varden. If I may make so bold, Mr. Edward, as to lean upon your chair," returned the locksmith, accommodating his action to his speech, and bending over him, "I'll stand here for the convenience of speaking low. Barnaby is not in his quietest humor tonight, and at such times talking never does him good." They both glanced at the subject of this remark, who had taken a seat on the other side of the fire, and, smiling vacantly, was making puzzles on his fingers with a skein of string. "Pray, tell me, sir," said Varden, dropping his voice still lower, "exactly what happened last night. I have my reason for inquiring. You left the Maypole alone?" "And walked homeward alone, until I had nearly reached the place where you found me, when I heard the gallop of a horse." "Behind you?" said the locksmith. "Indeed, yes, behind me. It was a single rider, who soon overtook me, and checking his horse, inquired the way to London." "You were on the alert, sir, knowing how many highwaymen there are, scouring the roads in all directions?" said Varden. "I was, but I had only a stick, having imprudently left my pistols in their holster case with the landlord's son. I directed him as he desired. Before the words had passed my lips, he rode upon me furiously, as if bent on trampling me down beneath his horse's hoofs. In starting aside, I slipped and fell. You found me with this stab, and an ugly bruise or two, and without my purse, in which he found little enough for his pains. And now, Mr. Varden," he added, shaking the locksmith by the hand, "saving the extent of my gratitude to you, you know as much as one. apostrophe, except, apostrophe, said Gabriel, bending down yet more, and looking cautiously towards their silent neighbor, except in respect of the robber himself. What like was he, sir? Speak low, if you please. Barnaby means no harm, but I have watched him oftener than you, and I know, little as you would think it, that he's listening now. Apostrophe, it required a strong confidence in the locksmith's veracity to lead anyone to this belief, for every sense and faculty that Barnaby possessed seemed to be fixed upon his game, to the exclusion of all other things. Something in the young man's face expressed this opinion, for Gabriel repeated what he had just said, more earnestly than before, and with another glance towards Barnaby, again asked what like the man was. The night was so dark, apostrophe said Edward, the attack so sudden, and he so wrapped and muffled up, that I can hardly say. It seems that apostrophe, don't mention his name, sir, apostrophe returned the locksmith, following his look towards Barnaby. I know he saw him. I want to know what you saw. Apostrophe, all I remember is, apostrophe said Edward, that as he checked his horse his hat was blown off. He caught it, and replaced it on his head, which I observed, was bound with a dark handkerchief. A stranger entered the Maypole, while I was there, whom I had not seen for I had sat apart for reasons of my own, and when I rose to leave the room and glanced round, he was in the shadow of the chimney and hidden from my sight. But, if he and the robber were two different persons, their voices were strangely, and most remarkably alike. For directly the man addressed me in the road, I recognized his speech again. Apostrophe, it is as I feared. The very man was here tonight, apostrophe thought the locksmith, changing color. What dark history is this? Apostrophe, halloa. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried a hoarse voice in his ear. Halloa, halloa, halloa. Bow wow wow. What's the matter here? Halloa. Apostrophe, the speaker who made the locksmith start, as if he had been some Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.